How is it that the person who supposedly has the most power in that room has been rendered impotent, cornered, trapped, afraid, exposed? How in the world did Herod get there? We have one of the most fascinating passages in Mark's gospel to work with this morning. And it is unusual for several reasons. One is, as you might have heard me say before, Mark's gospel is terse. It is abrupt. The writer of this gospel does not want to waste any time telling his story. Until we get to this part, which doesn't even include Jesus. And the writer of this gospel takes the better part of a chapter to tell this story. And it's a strange way to tell the story. It's almost Fellini-esque, the way that you enter into this dream sequence of Herod's. It's as if we are entering into his mind as he hears the news that we heard last week about Jesus sending his disciples out into the surrounding villages, giving them authority over demons and the ability to heal. This must have caused quite a sensation in the Galilee, because news of this itinerant teacher and healer and wonder worker makes it back to the people in power. And so they wonder just who this Jesus is. Herod's advisors have some good guesses. It's Elijah, or it's a prophet like the prophets of old. But Herod is convinced that he knows who this is. That it is John the Baptizer whom he had killed. And so we enter into this dark, dark place. But this story, like all good stories, has a story that happens before it. Do you remember, at the beginning of the Gospel according to Luke, the story about King Herod, who demanded a census of all the known world? Any head nods here? Does anybody remember this? Okay. Well, it's not that guy. It's actually his son. We're dealing today with Herod Antipas, King Herod the Great's son. Herod Antipas, not so great. In fact, even though he was a puppet king of Rome like his father, he was not entrusted with nearly as much of the kingdom. He just gets this backwater region called the Galilee. And it's actually on the eastern front, the very eastern front of the Roman Empire. And so one of the things that he has to do to be safe is he has to create allegiances with a nearby kingdom. And the way he does this is he agrees to marry that king's daughter, which is fine, until he covets his brother's wife and takes her, Herodias, to be his own. This is when our good friend John the Baptizer gets involved. John eviscerates Herod and Herodias publicly as adulterers. As you can imagine, this doesn't go over so well. Herodias demands that Herod arrest John the Baptizer and throw him into prison to rot. And so he does. But while he's there, this is the part that just blows me away. While he's there, somehow Herod wants to hear more. It's as if he is compelled by the words that John the Baptizer has. And I wonder if this dangerously honest man, John the Baptizer, is the only one who will actually tell the truth to Herod Antipas, will actually give it to him straight. So it makes me wonder, who's really the free one here? Well, all those heart-to-hearts have to end at some point. And it does when Herod's birthday is coming up. And there's a big banquet planned. And his wife, Herodias, seizes the moment. Because hell hath no fury like a wife / sister-in-law scorned. And this is a part of the story that has captured the imaginations of artists and composers and playwrights throughout the ages, from Caravaggio to Rembrandt to Oscar Wilde and Richard Strauss. Because Herodias then sends her daughter out to dance. To dance while the power brokers and the hangers-on leer and gape. And the rest is history. After the crowd goes wild, Herod Antipas, drunk on power, on wine, makes this solemn oath. He says, "You can have anything, even half of my kingdom." Herodias' daughter, other gospels call her Salome, goes back to her mother. "What should I ask for?" The trap is sprung. Herodias demands the head of the baptizer. And Salome asks for it on a platter. This is a banquet after all. Let's stay with Herod just for a moment and set aside, if we can, the vile acts he has committed and will commit. Let's just stay with him as he is stuck. Because he has given his word. Will the powerful people who have all gathered in his honor, will they be able to trust him if he goes back on the solemn oath? Will he have to endure more of the whispers and the stifled laughter that began when Herodias arrived? Does he even have a choice? This is Herod's dilemma. And it's a dilemma that anyone with power will have to face. Who will I protect? Will I protect myself? Will I protect my position? Will I protect my status? Will I protect my public face? Or in this case, will I protect this undeniably holy man, this inconvenient prophet that is speaking an uncomfortable yet undeniable truth? The dilemma of power is not Herod's alone. This is not so far away. We don't need to look any further than, say, the latest headline. Where should we begin? In a Walmart filled with children that have been forced from their families? Or in a trade war with our allies? Or in a $43,000 soundproof phone booth? Is that on eBay yet? But we don't even have to go that far, because to come face to face with what power can do, we need look only as close as our next breath. Because we, you and I, we all have power. Our birthday banquets may not include the everybody who's anybody of the military and the government and business. But we have power. Maybe it's the power of a parent who's with their two-year-old who has just lost it in the produce aisle over bananas. What next? Or a child whose aging parents are afraid, unwilling to accept a move or some needed help. Or maybe we're a friend who sees our group of friends isolating another person and we're afraid to stand up. Or an employee that knows that something is not right, but we're so close to the end of our career or the beginning or that next move. We all have power. So maybe that's why Mark spends so much time in this gospel telling this story. Remember, the disciples have just been sent out two by two. When Mark tells this story of Herod trading John the Baptist's head to save his own face. The disciples have been sent out two by two into those villages to liberate and to heal. And to do that, they will need to wield power, which we will, as followers, with our spouses and our neighbors, with our adversaries and with our allies. The question that always remains is, who will our power protect?